Previously on the Adventure Zone, quickly emerging from the ground, you see three very large, very purple worms. These three little piggies just cry the whole way home. Just like crying, doing a sad little purple worm cry.
So I'm the bad guy.
As they run away. The thing that most catches your eye on this main drag is the statue. This figure standing behind them is tall and muscular, is wearing a robe, a bright crimson red.
Oh, like the bad guys.
Turn right.
Okay, I turn right.
She gets like really, she's nose to nose. Turn right. And the metal sliding hatch that you saw over the top of shaft A that hadn't been shut is actually shut over this hole. So it's covering the entirety of shaft B. And you see June in front of you, and she's young again. And she falls to her hands and knees, and the cup rolls away from her and lands perfectly at your feet.
That's enough dilly-dallying and pussy-footing around. These heroes are out of time. It's the Adventure Zone.
I love you guys. I can't record another podcast all in the same room with you all.
This is very weird. I've never played D&D with you before. I've played of you.
Yeah, we played in live settings.
Oh, before. I wasn't playing.
But that's that's for the money.
Yeah. That was it for money. This is for the fun.
This is just for the funny, and I can see just the waves of nerd energy just radiating off out of all of our pale, sallowy skin.
The fun will be when we start communicating just purely non-verbally with all like looks and nods.
That's
and
good
the people
podcast
at home
shit.
Are like,
yeah.
What is this?
That's good podcast.
In accordance with Dungeons and Dragons protocol, I have provided for you a giant loose pile of Doritos in the middle of the table,
yeah.
And I have soaked the carpet with Mountain Dew that you may suckle at your leisure.
I'm just going to put my mouth down there and just kind of go buck wild.
Can I tell you the most upsetting thing about the loose pile of Doritos?
What's wrong?
Each Dorito is a different flavor, and I don't know how he did that.
I don't know
that.
Why
There's
you
one
did
of each from every, and not just like current flavors, every flavor that has ever existed.
Well, each flavor will give you dog breath.
This
so
is a
go ahead.
This is a weird energy to start the show with. Okay, you guys want to play some D&D? I would really like to finish this arc today.
I'm so horny for it, Griffin.
Okay.
Welcome to the same room with me, fellas. I say horny a lot.
Ugh. Okay, so when last we left off, you just sort of beat the offer given to you by the Temporal Chalice, and June, you're back at the top of Shaft B, and June has sort of collapsed after giving up the cup, and it fell and landed at your feet. Before we get to like what you guys do next, there's like a quick off-camera cut scene. And it shows a few folks around the town of refuge. You see Cassidy sneaking out of the crack in the wall in her cell. And as she like makes her way outside, she kind of shakes her head and closes her eyes and looks kind of confused. And then you see everybody in the Davy lamp, and the Davy lamp just falls silent. And Rin stops polishing glasses for a second and kind of looks confused. And you see Brogdon in the bank kind of sit up with a start, and then she flips a switch under her desk in the bank, and it drops these heavy metal gates over the entrances into the bank. And you see the Liberation Brigade and Redmond, their leader, stop their march into refuge and just kind of shake their head like they're remembering something, and they head home. And there's this air of confusion as everybody in the town of refuge starts to remember the things that have happened in these past loops. But there's also a lot of,
we did a lot of things, assuming they were erased from time.
Oh, no. But they're also, they also look kind of afraid because each of them knows what's about to happen to their city. And down in Shaft B, You know the truth, and that is that the temporal chalice is laying at your feet. It is no longer active, and this is the final loop.
I wanted to do something because I've been meaning to do it since, I think, episode maybe 46 or 47. It's hard to remember. I pick up the chalice, and I look at stupid what's-his-face in his face.
Isaac.
And I say, I told you we've dealt with this before, asshole. Okay, yeah, I just really wanted to make that clear because he didn't believe us at first.
Isaac is kind of in shock. Isaac is laying on the floor after being thoroughly sacked by Roswell. And he doesn't respond to that. But Roswell picks Isaac up by the shirt collar and just kind of holds Isaac right up to their face and reaches down and plucks off Isaac's sheriff badge. Ooh. And attaches it to themself.
Fuck yeah!
Yeah.
And just drops him back down on the floor with a thud. And Roswell looks at the three of you and says, what's the plan, boys? Just to describe the room, again, it's almost identical to Shaft A, only the hatch on Shaft A was open, and there was a lever there that hadn't been deployed. In Shaft B, the hatch is closed. There's a little platform that June is on. June is now, again, I think we said she was like 8 years old when all of this started. She is a little girl again. She is not the old, old, shriveled up person that you saw in the white space.
And what time is it?
You would estimate that it is about, it's like right before 11:30.
Okay.
You do hear some rumbling in the other room over in Shaft A. And June says, oh God, I'm not using the cup anymore. I'm not going to be able to sustain the barrier. He's gonna bust through it. We got to do something.
All right, boys. I let's think this through.
That'll be a switch.
I know, but we're in the same room now. So I mean, we've been in the same room the whole game. Don't worry about it. Evacuate or fight.
It seems to me that if we evacuate, they're just going to wreck shop anyway. I mean, they're going to destroy the whole thing.
Isaac says, you can't fight it. You can't fight it. Boys, listen to me. I've done this loop a couple thousand times. I've tried everything. You can't fight it. It's all over. There's nothing you can do to kill that purple worm. Trust me, I've tried everything.
I mean, you can't fight us either. I mean, so if we're doing greater than less than kind of equation.
That's fair. I mean, that's a really good point.
Yeah, I mean.
It is kind of a three brains against one thing.
Yeah, well, two and a half.
Well, maybe.
June.
She stands up and dusts her little yellow dress off at the knees.
Does she look like a Fanning? Can we say
she looks like a young, a minor Fanning?
Oh, yes. One of the minor Fannings?
Yes, one of the lesser Fannings.
And Isaac, too, I guess, as long, and maybe Roswell. When did the worm attack start? Was it before or after the big bubble?
Oh, it was after the big bubble. It was hibernating, and this is June talking. It was hibernating in its nest, and when the bubble popped up, it cut its nest in half, and she got separated from her babies. I don't think we should kill it. It doesn't feel right.
It sounds to me like the bubble needs to come down.
I don't think that's a bad idea, but if she breaks into the surface, you're not going to have time to convince it. We gotta keep it underground. If we can keep the worm underground, but somehow get it out of town, we might have a chance, but there's no way to bring the bubble down. I've tried everything with that, too.
Shink! What about this? That's the chance, Lance. Okay. I don't have a good sound for it yet.
Yeah, we'll keep working on it.
Lance!
I mean, that can bring that'll pop a bubble?
It'll pop a bubble real good.
I have an idea, he says. And he walks over to the lever of Shaft B, and he says, in all the loops that I've done, I haven't pulled this lever. This mine works with a ventilation system where the hatch has to be closed over either Shaft A or Shaft B. And I've been afraid to open up this shaft, because if the worm comes up here and killed June, that would be the whole ball game for all of us. So if we flip this switch, we can close Shaft A and open up Shaft B, and that'll at least keep the worm from destroying the town the same way it has some 2,500 times already.
It'll at least change something.
So kind of a fun, kicky new way of destroying the town. That'll feel very fresh and vibrant.
Destroy new.
Maybe, but we've tried everything else. It's worth a shot, don't you think?
Sure. Yeah. You know what? Fuck it.
I don't have much of a plan outside of that. So let's go for it.
Flip that beautiful
lemon. And hey, worst case scenario, we die, we come back to life. No big deal. Let's do it.
And okay. I hit the lever.
Okay. Yeah, you hit the switch and the hatch over shaft A closes over the bubble that was placed there, and the hatch into shaft B opens up. And while shaft A was kind of just like a straight shot down, it's like that was where they found the original mother load of diamonds and they just bored right down into it. Shaft B, you can see, is kind of more of an exploratory shaft. Like they were using shaft B to look for where more diamonds might be. And so the cart track that you're standing on goes into that shaft and kind of spirals all the way around it, branching off into little tunnels here and there, as these tunnels were sort of them just looking, trying to find more as they go. It kind of looks like a roller coaster down there of minecart tracks. As you open up that shaft, there's a small hole at the sort of the start of the track, and four minecarts roll out into them. And Roswell doesn't hesitate for a second. Roswell runs and jumps in one of the cars and says, I'm going to lead the worm away from the city. You three are more than welcome to join me if you want.
You got it. Isaac.
Like fun.
Isaac.
Yeah.
For once in your miserable life, do something cool. Get June out of here. Get her to safety.
Where is safe? What's going to be safe?
Safer than here, man.
Fucking everything's going to be safe when we're done, Boobala. Don't you worry.
But I theorize. Let me hypothesize. Things are going to go bad in this mine.
Oh, no, it's going to get whack.
Okay.
Definitely. It'll get whack before it gets better.
I don't even know. He goes to the three of you and sort of says discreetly, like, I don't even know if she's going to want to come with me, man.
She's eight, my
You're
dude.
You're way big. She's way little.
Offer her cake. Tell her there's cake.
She saw me kill her daddy. That doesn't...
Cake trumps that.
I killed her daddy. That doesn't seem like the type of thing you just easily forgive.
She's had a lot of time to think about it.
Like a lot.
Yeah, I guess we all have. And all of a sudden, June is behind him with her hand outstretched, like, all right, come on, let's go, dummy.
That's a good one, June. Sick burn.
She points to the three of you and Roswell and says, I'm begging y'all, please don't kill it. Please don't kill it. It's just a mama that's looking for her babies. Promise me. Promise me you're not going to hurt her.
I promise.
No such promise from the other two.
Yeah.
I've lied to kids before. Yeah, I promise.
Yeah, like he said.
They head out through the airlock, and it's just you three and Roswell, and you get into the carts.
I would like to try something before I get into the cart. I want to close my eyes.
Okay.
Hold out the chance lance.
Okay.
And whisper a small prayer to Istis to point me at the best track.
So there's only one starting out track, but it can point you towards one of the cars.
Okay.
And it points you towards the first car.
Okay. I get in the first car.
Okay. There's three other cars, 2, 3, and 4. What positions do you guys want to be in? Roswell will fill in wherever you don't want to go.
I feel like I could be the most use in the back because I can cover us back there with magical spells.
Okay, Merle?
I'll take 3.
Okay, so the order is Magnus, Roswell, Merle, Taco. All right, y'all ready?
By the way, folks, keep an eye out on your news feeds for the announcement of the new theme park. The Adventure Zone, the theme park.
There probably is one of those called the Adventure Zone already that is not affiliated with our brand.
At all.
There's lots of go-kart tracks called the Adventure Zone. I found out after we called the podcast that, and I've been working with our lawyers to shut down every last one of those fucking places.
If Griffin has any power at all, he will kill go-karts forever.
I will ruin everybody's go-kart memories. Okay. There's a small, very small motor on the back of each of the carts, and as you all get in, they kick into gear, and you start down the track. And the track, this first leg, it just kind of spirals all the way around. It does a long loop spiraling down the length of shaft B.
Do we have to do a constitution check to see if we puke?
I mean,
we haven't eaten in like 70 days.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah, let's just roll just so I have like an idea of like how you guys handle the wet and wild nature of these stunts.
I got a 2, 4.
Okay, you're all 5. Okay, so nobody's...
Seasick boys.
Nobody's loving it.
Well, mine's plus 7, so it's a 9.
Still, okay, then you are kind of loving it. Okay, yeah, you are... So you're spiraling down the length of track B, moving downward. This event, by the way, is going to be separated into several legs. This is leg 1. This is how we're going to handle this. You're moving down the track as you spiral downward. And just barely after you get started, you hear that roar that you've heard so many times before, but it's interrupted almost immediately by a loud crash. And then you hear the roar again, but it's even like angrier this time. And you feel the ground around you start to rumble as you are spiraling down the track. And once you get about 100 feet down from the top of Shaft B, you see from a wall on the opposite end of the spiral, you just watch it explode open. And there is the purple worm. And it's got a mouthful of fire that it's like charging up.
I want to say something cool like, I think we got its attention! Something like that as we go, but I'm screaming.
You actually don't have its attention because it smashes through the wall and it arcs its head up and starts to head up towards refuge. What do you do?
Are we safe to assume that, like, if we conned Roswell and he was, like, a skull to us, is this, like, quadruple skulls to us?
Just using sort of your, like, logic, this thing is a fucking, like, nightmare beast, the likes of which, like, you've never, ever seen before.
I'm going to level my short bow at it then and see if I can just, like, hit it with an arrow.
Okay.
Because, listen, we promised we wouldn't hurt it. I get the impression a single arrow ain't going to do much.
Yeah, make an attack roll.
How far is it from us?
It's about 40 feet from you.
That's a 3. That's not great.
Yeah. You get the impression. This is like shooting an arrow at like a super train. It's like shooting an arrow at an airplane. Like it just like bing.
But would it not right get off. Its attention? Aren't we trying to
maybe
lure
if
it away?
If it had been a sick ass arrow roll. So that was Travis's action.
We're trying to get its attention so we can lure it away, right?
Yes.
Okay. I've got a spell called Gaius.
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 Got a bad case in case of Gaius.
It has to succeed on a wisdom saving throw, or it becomes charmed by me for the duration. But while it's charmed by me, if it doesn't do what I tell it to do, it takes 5d10 psychic damage every time it acts in a manner directly counter to my instructions.
Okay. How long does that last?
No, how long it lasts. It says the duration.
Okay.
30 days.
30 days.
Fucking days. Wow. Okay.
30 days.
Okay, I rolled a nat 20. So I'm pretty sure that's gonna save against Gaze.
That saved against it.
Alright, I cast Shatter.
Okay.
A sudden loud ringing noise, painfully intense, erupts from a point of your choice within range. I'm gonna do it from 11 feet away from us.
Okay.
Okay. How far away is it from us?
It's about 40 feet away from you.
Perfect. I'm casting Shatter because it makes a huge noise.
Okay.
But nothing is within range, so there's no damage.
Okay.
I'm just casting it.
All right, yeah. So that you cast Shatter, and it makes an ear-splitting noise. And it also... It has a special effect on, like, crystal and rock and shit like that, right?
It has... Like, if the creature's made of... inorganic material,
sure.
It has disadvantage.
It echoes all through Shaft B and just like shoots up past the worm's upward trajectory and hits the ceiling. Like the echoes of it hit the ceiling, and a few big rocks come down from the ceiling and smash into the purple worm's head. And it turns to find the source of the noise, and it sees the three of you boys, or the four of you, in your minecart. And sure enough, it pivots downward and starts to head in your direction.
I flip it off with both hands and stick my tongue out.
Nice.
Yeah. It looks like this.
Yeah.
It's, and we've got you see can't it. See it at home. It's really rock and roll.
Yeah,
it's really
that's rock. Awesome.
I think Dennis Leary at his coolest.
Okay. Yeah. So you have the worm's attention. It is now flying downward at you. And like at this point, it has cleared its body from the hole that it first smashed in through. This thing is long as hell. Right when it's actually about to catch up to you guys, the track branches off into a tunnel. So now you're not spiraling downward anymore. Now you're just kind of on this straightaway going through a tunnel.
While I've got the second, I just kind of calmly switch my hero's belt to fire.
Okay. Do you do it discreetly so nobody else sees?
Yeah, just like...
Click. Okay. So you are now on a straightaway, and you see the worm behind you crash through a bunch of the different tracks, just kind of shredding them, and then stop itself and arc its head up. And then all of a sudden, it is following you through the tunnel. And it is way too thick for this tunnel, so it's kind of like its rows of teeth are grinding in opposing directions, clockwise and counterclockwise, just like drilling into the tunnel behind you. So you're on this straightaway. All of your carts are good and going. But the purple worm is gaining ground. What do you do to slow it down? And this is leg two.
Are we in any particular order?
I mean, you're in cart order, which can affect things later on, but I'm just kind of...
I don't have anything to slow it down, Dad, so let me do a... what are you going to do?
I'm going to cast Shield of Faith on Taco, which adds to his AC. He's now in the front because you're in the back.
He's worm-wise.
You're closest to the worm, and I figure you're going to do more damage than Magnus does.
Okay.
Okay.
So I cast Shield of Faith... Shimmering field appears and surrounds Taco, granting a +2 bonus to AC.
Okay.
That is what a cleric does.
That's really
boys.
Good.
Boys.
Good. I am going to, unsatisfied or perhaps untrusting Marl's acumen, I cast Fire Shield on myself to add additional... this is actually a 10-foot radius, so I think it would get me...
It would probably get all of you, yeah.
Yeah, get us all. So this... what it is at specifically is a chill shield. So this chill shield grants us our distance to fire.
Fill it up.
Oh, wow.
Very chill shield.
Yeah, I'm going to protect you, I guess.
Right now, are we all still in line, too?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've done that.
Okay. Those are your actions. Magnus, what are you going to do? All you're trying to do is slow the purple worm down.
Super good question. Well, with all of my magic and cool stuff... I'm gonna do nothing.
Why don't you make a chair and throw it at it?
I do that.
You don't have anything to make a chair
damn
out of.
Damn it. I thought, okay. I mean, I'll tell you the one thing that I've always got.
What?
An idea.
oh, wow.
Thank you. I like that line. Okay, looking up the ceiling, do I see any cracks or anything?
Yes, just in front of you, you see some cracks in the ceiling.
Okay, great. I'm gonna aim the chance lance at the cracks.
Okay.
So 16 plus 9, 25.
Okay, what was your goal with that? You're just trying to wedge it in there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you throw the chance lance up.
And then it back to me.
Okay. All right, yeah, so you throw it up and leave it, and it sort of passes over all of your heads, and the purple worm is basically between you and it, and you recall it?
Yep.
Okay. Then I think how we could make that work is we'll just use that roll as the attack on the purple worm. The purple worm was going to go next, and you actually saw from its like neck, it has these frills of tentacles, and one of them was starting to whip forward, but the chance lance actually cuts right through that tentacle and cuts it off in a spray of purple goo.
Sorry, June!
And you hear the purple worm kind of wail. I think with that, you prevent the penalty that was going to happen on leg two, but I don't think you guys are out of leg two. I think you still need to slow this thing down so we can start another round of actions.
And to be clear, you didn't promise June not to hurt it. You promised not to kill it.
One of those two. I promise something.
Who's going to slow this worm down?
I'm going to use my scrying bones.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to use my scrying bones. I get to ask the DM a yes or no question once a day.
Okay, so you kneel down in your cart, and you get these bones out of your pocket. Like, oh, God, here we go.
Here we go. Please, baby. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. And my question to you.
Okay.
Is the worm more vulnerable on the inside than trying to go through the outside? In other words... If we attack it, will it have more effect if we aim for the mouth and the inside?
Yes, its outside is covered in like really, really thick leathery skin that allows it to like move through, chew its way through solid rock without like getting all cut up and torn up. So
the mouth and the inside are more vulnerable.
Yes.
There. That was for you guys.
Okay, but you still get an action, right? Is that his action?
But that answer should have been given to you like, yes, because these bones are just a rattling and a rumbling on the floor of your mind cart.
Oh, I didn't know the bones could talk. That would be really cool.
Justin, I see you going through a bunch of spell cards.
Just coming trying up to find with any... something useful, man. Okay, I'm trying to picture it. So we have four carts.
Yep.
He's coming through a tunnel.
Yep.
And he's kind of chewing it up,
yeah.
Right?
It's a she. It's a mama worm.
It's a she. Describe for me her teeth.
She has like a bunch of like a dozen rows of teeth that sort of spin in opposing directions.
Okay, great. I'm going to throw a whole bunch of robot arms into them.
Okay, so you just have a hefty bag full of roboid arms.
And I'm just like waiting, holding them off the side, and then I just kind of dump them in the way. So it's a whole bunch of metal arms in there.
Oh, but you've worked so hard to collect them.
Yeah, but I don't want to die.
I mean, I'm going to take every robot arm from you. You will have no robot arms. All of them.
I'll rebuild.
Okay. You send some roboid arms. They bounce backward down the track, and a few of them get wedged in her teeth. Make an attack roll. This would be a...
It's a 10 plus my standard plus is plus 8, 18.
Okay, yeah, it doesn't stop her.
Plus the opposite of unarmed.
You disarmed?
Super armed?
I would say several of the arms just don't go in her mouth at all. A few do, and she just like handily eats them. No big deal. But a couple get wedged in her, a couple of rows of her teeth, and it slows her down a little bit, but she's still pursuing. Taco, it sounded like you had some hot shit.
Not hot shit. I don't know. I'm just going to try something.
All right.
I have tentacles of my own. And I cast Evard's Black Tentacles.
I remember this one.
Squirming ebony tentacles feel a 20-foot square on the ground that you can see within range. For the duration, these tentacles turn the ground in the area into difficult terrain. So basically, casting on the tracks as it's following us, so like behind myself, basically, when it enters the affected area for the first time on a turn or starts its turn there, the creature must succeed on a dexterity saving throw or take D6 bludgeoning damage.
I'll do this right now.
Okay.
Because this thing's like right behind you, so it would happen. Ooh, that's a 6. Okay, so we'll say this is that money. As it moves its way through, these tentacles reach up and grab the worm, and it pulls these tentacles to the point where they're about to snap and break. But the purple worm, for just a moment, gets held up and has to fight its way out of the grasp of these long tentacles. And it gives you all time enough to move out of this straightaway safely from the purple worm's approach. So you've made it through.
Good job, Taco.
You've made it through.
Magic is easy.
You've made it through the straightaway and exit out over a large black chasm. It's just like the tunnel you were in just stopped, and all of a sudden there's nothing but track ahead of you. And from the rear cart, a lever springs up from the floor. And Taco, for a split second ahead of you, you realize that the track branches off to the left and the right. And you can change the direction of all four carts by choosing the direction to go. Which way do you pull it?
So there's just two ways I can pull it.
Left or right, yeah.
Just the two different ways I can pull it. Badly wanna... Okay. So I can either pull it left or right.
Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. So, if y'all can see Travis,
if I was just gonna turn it left or right,
Travis is on the floor.
Oh God, I'm gonna lose it. Go right.
So wait, I can just left or right?
Yeah, it's the two options.
Go right. There's the prophecy. There's the prophecy. Remember the prophecy. There's the prophecy. You gotta go right.
Trav, please. My daughter's sleeping. Please try to keep it down. No, I understand. You very so. Just left or right?
Yeah.
Do I see anything to the left?
No, it's kind of dark in here. It's
do
hard
I see
to tell.
Anything
like
to the right, or?
Again, it's kind of hard to tell. You just kind of see the branch. Yeah.
I wish I had anything to go.
I've got some control spells. I can control it.
Gosh,
it was the worm.
Maybe right. I guess right.
Okay. You jerk the lever to the right, and all four of the cars go off into the right path. And you go down a ways on the track and then into another tunnel. And right before you go in that tunnel, you actually see the left track and it just ends. And then below that, you see like 10 carts just like all piled up on the ground 100 feet below with some skeletons.
Can we just say that like the mine company did a really bad job if after the first cart, they weren't like, you know what? We're going to close this one.
This one doesn't work.
We should get rid of that lever now that I think about it.
And we owe a big one to Penumbra, I believe.
Paloma.
Okay, so you've moved into another tunnel. The purple worm has caught up. Almost. It is, again, just about behind you. And all of a sudden, levers pop out of all of your carts. Taco, actually, the lever you just used sort of recedes back into the cart, and a different one pops up. These move up or down, and all of you have to flip them into one of those positions, including Roswell.
Do you go up or down?
Up or down. You all don't have to pick the same thing.
I'll go down.
Okay.
Yell it out in character, because I think we should at least be 2-2.
I am going down.
Okay, you flip yours into the down position.
I'm going up.
Magnus flips his into the up position. Taco?
Which way is Roswell going?
Roswell will go whichever way, I guess, you don't go, if we want to do an even 2-2 split.
Down.
Okay, you flip yours into the down position. Roswell flips it into up. So Roswell and Magnus are going up. Taco and Merle are going down. And sure enough, the track kind of does a branch going upwards. And carts number 1 and 2 branch off and go up the track. And Merle and Taco, you stay on the lower track, which actually dips down a little bit. And the purple worm just gets a burst of speed out of somewhere. And is basically in between the two of you on these tracks. Let's say Magnus and who's in the front of the lower section now? Merle? Magnus and Merle make a dexterity saving throw.
Yeah. You can use one of mine,
Thank
Eddie.
You.
That's good enough.
12, 15?
Yeah, you're good. You sort of beat away these tentacles as they whip up from out of the worm's mouth. Gross.
What?
We already said we were going down.
Gross again. Two grosseroonies. This one's getting the explicit tag on iTunes for sure. Merle and Taco, you are above the purple worm. Magnus and Roswell are above the purple worm. Merle and Taco, you're below the purple worm. What do you do to slow down or handicap the worm from these positions?
I cast Spiritual Weapon.
Okay.
I'm going to cast Spiritual Weapon, which creates a floating spectral weapon. I shape it to look like a giant fish hook.
Okay.
Because if that doesn't scare the shit out of a worm, I don't know what will.
Nice.
Okay. So you just roll an attack?
Yep.
Yeah.
18.
That'll definitely do it.
All right. And then I roll a D8, correct?
I'm so glad I'm here so that I can give you my
dice.
I'm sorry.
All right. So I roll a D8.
Not supposed to touch another man's dice.
It's a 5.
You're using up all my luck.
My spellcasting modifier is it plus 8. So that's 13.
Okay. You hit it for 13 damage, which isn't a ton of damage for the purple worm, but the hook does get caught in its giant mouth full of teeth and drags it backwards just a little bit, which kind of moves it from in between all four of your carts to now just kind of behind it.
Nice job, Merle.
Good work, Merle. Taco and Magnus, you're still kind of in danger from the worm. It is still sort of close enough to get some damage on you.
Okay, so it's me.
You and Roswell on top, Merle and Taco down below.
I've been doing a lot of bacon saving. You got anything you want to try?
With what?
Bow? You got a spear? Whatever?
With my spear. Okay. With my spear and my bow.
Oh, I've seen that fucking look before.
Okay.
Have you?
Actually, you haven't. Have you?
Well, that's a good point. I've heard of this look.
Okay. Describe the skin of the worm to me.
Oh, my
Thick
God.
Thick and purple and leathery.
I know what you're thinking.
Okay. Any openings?
There's a small opening that was made by the hook just now on the like side of its cheek.
Okay.
Come on, do it.
Tie a rope. Well, so this is what I want to do. Tie a rope to the chance lance.
Okay.
And tie the rope off to my cart.
Okay.
And aim that. Okay. Hold one end. Tie it to a crowbar.
Okay.
And I'm going to aim the chance lance for that hole.
Okay. It's going to be a tough shot.
19.
Oh. Yeah.
Plus 9 is 28.
Yeah, that'll do it. You throw it, and it manages to wedge its way into the hole.
And I hook that crowbar on the the rails.
Okay, you now have a taut rope leading between you and the
performer. No, not on my car. When I drop, like, hook it between the rails.
Okay. Yeah, you... Okay, this is how this is going to work out. You do that. You put it down. You just drop the crowbar into the rails. I think we get a close-up on the purple worm's eyes. It's like 17 wow. eyes as it, like, realizes as the rope sort of whips backwards behind it. It goes like, uh-oh. And it just comes to almost a complete stop. And you have, you've definitely handicapped the worm and kept it from catching up to you. Side effect, you have almost destroyed the track that you and Roswell are on. And you've pulled it completely off the wall that it was sort of like, these iron bars had secured it onto. And now the track is sort of free and wobbling, and about to go down.
I recall the Chance Lance.
Okay, you recall the Chance Lance and you have it back, but the track is still about to fall over with you and Roswell on it. What do you do?
Are the two boys below us?
Yeah, more or less.
All right. Junebug.
Yeah, what do you need? It's not a great time.
We gotta jump.
This is a shitty shit plan. You know that, right?
So I figure you can like do like a stretchy thing. I saw you do it in the bank.
You want me to do what now?
I want you to do big stretchy arms, like Stretch Armstrong. You know what I mean? We're going to get down there.
You want me to stretch my body and connect our carts to their carts?
Very much so.
This is a stupid idea, but...
Junebug, do it.
Okay. Roswell whips its arms to the side in a T, and the armor on its arms just goes flying off and backwards into the abyss, and now it just has these two long clay arms, and it whips them down from your carts on the top track and grabs onto the back of Merle's cart and forms basically like a clay bridge with its body.
Okay, I grab onto Roswell and I say, let's go over there. Tighten her up, stretch.
What? You go first. Just go. Cross my arms.
I slide down their arms using like my shield as like a, you know, the zip line, like...
That's fucking great. Okay, because of you just do it. You work your way down. How is Roswell? You're commanding Roswell right now. How does Roswell get down? Because they can't use their own arms as a bridge.
But they're holding on, right?
They are holding on, yeah.
Okay, just jump.
This is a shit idea, are you sure?
It's going to be great.
Okay, they're going to make an acrobatics roll. We'll say they have plus... I mean, they're not acrobatic. They're a huge ball of clay. So let's do straight up or down. Let's see how they do. Okay, here's what's going to happen. Roswell manages to sort of retract, like you said, like retract itself. So Roswell like manages to get in, but it's not like a clean entry. And Roswell loses some clay. Like their legs and their leg armor and the clay that was on their legs just gets like knocked off as it gets caught in the tracks. But Roswell pulls himself off and you see some of their torso kind of like siphon down and form new legs, but there's no armor on them. There's no armor on them at all. And the bird on Roswell's shoulder, like it looks completely frazzled right now, like because of what just happened. But Roswell stands up and puts up a naked fist with nothing coming out, and then like looks at their fist, and then forms some clay to make a thumb. But now all of you are sharing two cars, and you see the track above you just like fall. It's actually wobbling and kind of in danger of falling over onto your lower track, but it goes the other way and collapses into the wall.
That was close.
Okay, fourth leg. You are nearing the end of this tunnel. The worm is way, way behind you at this point. But you realize that in all the commotion that just happened, the power unit for the back cart, the engine, must be going out or something because it's got a big gash on it and it's shooting out sparks. And your carts are starting to lose speed very quickly as you hear the worm making its way in your direction from deeper behind the tunnel. What do you do to get these carts moving again?
Don't you have a wrench, Merle?
I have the adamant spanner.
Okay. Yeah, and then like a magic wrench that fixes things when you hit him?
Yep.
Okay.
Super cool.
Whang!
Merle, you are in the rear car, no, so you don't. Hit the engine with the animate spanner, and the gash on it seals up, and the sparks stop shooting out. However, there's way too much speed. There's way too much weight in these two carts that they weren't sort of meant to carry. So your carts are moving again, but the worm is catching up really fast. So if you have another way to sort of gain some speed, all four of you are in two carts.
I say we make Roswell jump out.
No,
that less, and then it's less weight, and we'll go faster.
Listen, I don't argue with your logic.
Roswell says, like, if that's what you, if
no,
that's what you
guys, Roz. Not going to do that to you.
Roswell, it's a good idea. Hang on. And I cast Levitate on Roswell.
Okay. Roswell is now... Okay, you've lifted the weight out of the cart that was Roswell, and Roswell still has their two clay hands on the back of the cart floating behind you. And that the removal of that weight was exactly what you needed to get the speed back and going again. The purple worm has more or less caught up to you, and Roswell, their arms are stretching out because they're made of clay, and Roswell is now starting to actually fall backwards. What do you do to save Roswell?
We pull them back?
Okay, yeah, you grab onto Roswell's arms and, like, pull them forward as the purple worm snaps its mouth shut, just narrowly missing Roswell. One of you will have to keep like a hand on Roswell's like armor to keep its clay from stretching out. Who does that? If you do that,
cool. I'll do that. They need both their hands for magic and stuff.
All right. So Magnus, you are now kind of holding on to Roswell, keeping them from floating away. And you've cleared this leg. And you come out of this tunnel, and you are in a massive underground cavern. With tons of small tunnels bored in nearly every direction, all searching for new veins of diamonds. But there aren't tracks leading into these tunnels, and you actually realize with horror that the track that you're currently on comes to a full stop in this room. There's a steep, about 120-foot ramp leading downward, followed by a brief incline, and then just nothing. And about 70 feet in front of the end of that ramp upward is... the only source of light in this room, it's the shimmering light coming off of the exterior bubble of town. It is a full sphere, and so it reaches underground too, and that is where you are. So you're basically heading down a ski jump, essentially, leading into the bubble. And you have reached the end of the line.
How much time do we have?
You have just kind of moments.
Okay, I have a plan. It's a little nutty, but go with me on this. Merle, grab Roswell.
Check.
Okay, Taco, get into this cart.
Okay, Merle is now holding on to Roswell's arms, keeping them from floating away.
Yes.
Okay.
Whee!
Get in the cart.
Yeah, I'm in.
Okay, great. Okay,
Taco hops into the front cart.
Now, you've got a thing that, like, makes things bigger, right? A spell?
Yeah.
Like you did with the motorcycle, right?
Yep.
Okay, soup up the engine on the back of the cart.
That's dumb.
It'll be great.
It seems
we got to break through, right? And remember the cannon? The only way to get through the bubble was the high speed, right? And I've got this lance.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Brace your asses.
As you are clearing the tunnel, you also realize there's another source of light, and it is the purple worm, and it has a big old fireball that it is about to barf out on all of you. Merle, what are you doing? You're holding
quick
up,
question.
You're holding up a card like you're in Yu-Gi-Oh.
I'm gonna.
Do it. Play it.
I'd play.
Okay. Blue Eyes White Dragon.
We're sending the empty cart towards the worm or towards the bubble?
We're in the cart towards the bubble. There's a cart behind us that's empty now.
I cast Guardian of Faith on the one we're cutting loose that's sending it back to the worm.
Okay.
To do damage.
All right.
And slow it down.
An angel appears in the rear cart. Dale Reese appears in the rear cart and says, this feels right.
And
that rear cart skips. She jams a beautiful golden heavenly spear into the hitch connecting the two carts and goes flying backward and does an attack on the purple worm. I guess we're kind of playing Calvin Ball with the purple worm at this point. Okay, so you have this very very fast cart, and you are. Oh wait. You cast that spell, but in doing so, you definitely let Roswell go. And now Roswell is just sort of floating off backwards.
Oh, no, you don't.
I cast Bigby's hand, and a large hand appears and grabs Roswell and holds them.
Okay, here's the scene. All the three of you are now flying down this ramp. Mm-hmm. You're about halfway down it, this ski jump ramp out to the end of the bubble. Roswell is free floating behind you, basically perfectly in between you and the worm. And Roswell has drawn their halberd. In like striking position. The worm is immediately behind Roswell with a big mouthful of fire. And you cast Bigby's hand, and a big hand reaches out and grabs Roswell. And Roswell says, okay, you all have done some great work here. I need you to trust me right now. Trust me, Taco. Tell me that I made refuge safe. Just do it. Tell me that I made refuge safe.
Roswell, you made refuge safe.
As you say that, Roswell starts to kind of expand like they did in the bank. And Roswell says, thanks a lot, fellas. And a fireball shoots out of the purple worm's mouth. And right as it leaves its mouth, you watch Roswell just kind of spasm and send its clay outward in a giant red sheet. And as it does, the glow, like the yellow glow that was sustaining it, just disappears from the clay as this giant red sheet catches the fireball and keeps it from destroying all of your carts. And as it does, as Roswell does this, you see that yellow light just kind of leave that clay and just enter into the vermilion flycatcher that was on Roswell's shoulder the whole time as this red bird flies upward and away from the fiery explosion. And the purple worm kind of gets caught up in the clay net as well and gets slowed down. And the three of you are safe and free as you fly down the ramp and launch upward off the end
Magnus
of the ramp.
Braces all in the one chance cart. Lands like a lance, like in his shoulder forward.
Okay, the three of you are a dart that has been thrown off the end of this ramp and jab into the side of the bubble, and the extremely loud room that you were just in kind of just falls silent, and you are in a white space and in a cart, in a mine cart going 100 miles an hour, but just sort of sailing through the white space. And then all of a sudden you see a hole in front of you in the white space as you see daylight and red clay, and you emerge out of the bubble where you entered into the town of refuge, and you flip over the cart you're in, flips end over end, and dumps you on the ground as the cart keeps going just past you, and you are back in the Woven Gulch, and you are lying just in front of Avi and his big Jaeger cannon. And Avi turns and looks at you, and he's really startled. He says, you guys just scared the shit out of... And before he can finish, the hole that you just came through in the barrier expands, and the purple worm sails through it. The purple worm sails through the side of the bubble.
I pull Avi down.
You grab Avi and pull him down, and this it's like a train going over you. Like, it casts a shadow over all of you and sails over you for probably a good 15 seconds. Before it skids to a halt just past you. And without missing a beat, it whips its head around and readies another fireball in your direction. But just as it's about to incinerate you, you feel a rumble beneath your feet, and from all around it, from all around the purple worm, three smaller purple worms burrow up from the ground, and it's the ones that you fought at the beginning
of the adventure. And spared, might I add.
And spared at the beginning. And these three purple worms are all whining this sound that is, they sound overjoyed, but it's a horrible noise. And the mama worm looks at these three little worms, and then back at you, and then back at the baby worms, and then it roars, but not the like anguished scream that you've heard, you know, a dozen times or so now, right before refuge was destroyed. It's a roar of joy, and it wraps itself around its three children and pulls its head high up into the sky and then slams down into the ground, burrowing away with its family.
It's a mother and child reunion. You guys have heard that song before.
No, right? But I get the point of it. It was pretty straightforward.
You literally said the thing that happened. You sang the thing that happened.
Well, Paul Simon did originally. I was just quoting.
Hey Hey, everybody, it's Griffin McElroy, your Dungeon Master, your best friend, and your other thing. Thanks for listening to episode 49 of The Adventure Zone. It's the last episode of the 11th Hour's arc. It feels like we just started that a couple weeks ago, but in really, it's been like 5 months. Thanks for listening to this whole arc. The feedback we've gotten on it has been so great, and I'm really happy with how it turns out here at the end of this episode, which I'm going to let you get to, but first, I'm going to do some commercials to you. Got a bunch of Jumbotron messages to read to you. If you want to get a message on the show, just go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. You can find out how to do that there. First message here is for Carl, the man boy wizard, and it's from Fluffles the Brave. These are fake names, aren't you? This is you're pranking me, aren't you? Unless that's your real name, in which case, oh my God, I'm terribly sorry. Fluffles says to Carl, happy anniversary to the most magical man in my life. The past 365 days have been fantasy and fun-filled, and there's no other person I would rather have spent the last year adventuring with. From mountain climbing to playing D&D, I'm glad to have you by my side through everything. I love you forever and always. This was supposed to go up on July 30th, so this is an anniversary plus change. It's you're already on your way to the next anniversary, and I'm so happy for you. Congratulations on all the love, and keep it going. Hang in there. Sounds like something. Anyway, great job on the love, and well done. Got another message here for Helgar. Sorry, this message is actually for Heglar. But if you're Helgar and you want this message to be about you, you can just make believe. Anyway, it's from Johnson, who says to Heglar, "What up, buddy? Congratulations on finishing your master's and getting married in a few weeks, both of which have probably already happened. Definitely. Sucks about your parenting critical miss a while back, and remember not to do anything awful with your biotech degree, or you'll have a fingerling potato coming your way. Miss you, dude." I'm hoping this is just sort of a fun, innocuous in-joke and not like, you know, this person's invented a potato bomb, and that was the most threatening thing I've ever read on the show. But yeah, congratulations, Heglar, on both the nuptials and the masters, both of which have like almost certainly happened like 6 months ago, because we're really bad at doing these things on time. Got one more message here. This one's for Katie and Dan, and it's from your brother and me, who say congratulations on leveling up as grown-ups and getting hitched. When we tried to come up with something that would adequately symbolize your love, we came up with lizard person and kobold slash fic. We'll be sure to fill you in on the anatomical details in our wedding speeches. Love, your brothers Will, Mark, and Jacob. That's going to be just a buck wild wedding speech. That's going to be one of the wettest and wildest wedding speeches probably in the history of the whole exercise. But congratulations, Katie and Dan, on getting married. It is fun stuff, and I bet you're really going to dig it. Thanks to everybody who's been tweeting about the show using the Zonecast hashtag. We don't pay to advertise the show at all, so word of mouth is literally the only way that we get new listeners. And we have a really great following now, and that's entirely because of you. So if you can tweet about the show using the Zonecast hashtag, man, we sure do appreciate it. I think the next episode is probably going to be a lunar interlude before we get started on the next arc. So we'll probably have some new characters coming up in the next few episodes. So if you want to end up as a character on the show, just tweet about the show using the Zonecast hashtag, and it could happen to you. A few thank yous. Thanks to the Maximum Fun Network for having us. You can go to MaximumFun.org and find out all about the different shows on the network. They're all so great, and we're so happy to be a part of the network. They have shows like Throwing Shade and Stop Podcasting Yourself and Jordan Jesse Go and Judge John Hodgman and the Beef and Dairy Network and the Greatest Generation. So many amazing shows, all for free on MaximumFun.org. If you want to find the other shows that we do and other ways to sort of get in touch with us, like our PO boxes and all that stuff, you can go to McElroyShows.com, and we got a full list of all of our projects there. So that is it for this episode. The next one will be up on, let me do some quick math. Oh shit, let me get my calendar. Hold on, wait. The next episode is going to be up on October 6th. And so we will talk to you then. See you soon. Bye. Avi is just white as a sheet. He is paralyzed in fear.
How's it going?
He doesn't respond to you. He's just like,
I slap him.
Hey, I've got a fun question. How long have we been gone, you think, Avi?
Yeah, it's a real good one.
He doesn't respond to you. He's just paralyzed.
I slap him again.
He doesn't move or respond to that because he's paralyzed.
I slap him.
Okay, you take turns slapping Avi.
Anybody want a free shot on Avi?
He doesn't move because he's literally paralyzed, and you realize he's outlined in red light. And from behind him, you actually see sort of apparate behind him the red-robed figure that you've encountered a few times now. And it holds it really quickly, holds a finger to its lips, and then waves its hand in a circle, and your stones of far speech, they go dim. They go dark. The red-robed figure says,
did you retrieve the cup?
Yes.
Why did you change?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No, we didn't do anything with it.
You didn't use the cup?
Nope. No. We all three said no, right?
Yeah, we didn't use it.
I'm really proud of you. I thought there was a chance that maybe this would be the one to end your adventure.
Wait, and you're proud? Aren't we? Wait, hold on. You're the red robe, right? You're one of the bad guys.
Who's told you that?
Everybody.
Everybody. The bureau and what's her face? The director and
TMZ.
I need to know. Do you trust me?
Wait.
No. Hell no. Hell no.
You're fucking popping up in a red robe like Satan. You're speaking parcel tongue. You're like, no, we don't trust you. What kind of question is that?
As you say that you don't trust him, this apparition, this basically red robed ghost, or it's a lich, floating in front of you. It starts to lose its composure. It starts to lose, and I mean that literally. Like the spectral form starts to jerk violently, and a bolt of energy, kind of like whips off of it. And actually, Merle, make a dex save. That's a great 20. You dodge out of the way, actually, as a bolt of red energy kind of like whips off this red robe and sort of moves back past you. And this red robe figure falls to its knees, and he's muttering to himself like he's trying to calm himself down. And it doesn't sound like it sounds every other time that he's spoken to you. It sounds like a guy's voice. And he says to himself, Loop, they don't trust me. I can't do it anymore, Loop. I'm sorry. And he calms down, and the sort of distortion that was happening to him kind of fades, and he stands back up and says,
the next time we meet, I will need you to trust me completely and absolutely. Otherwise, all of this will have been for nothing. The hunger is almost here, and when it arrives, this world will be lost.
And he disappears. And immediately, Avi says, was that a purple worm? And is unparalyzed.
Oh, yeah, it totally was. Hey, Avi, quick question. How long have we been gone from your perspective?
Like 45 minutes?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, isn't that right?
That's so good. Do you want to know what football teams are going to win?
You all notice that actually the bubble is still up in front of you. Like the bubble did not come down. And in fact, the hole that the three of you and the worm all came through has closed back up. Refuge is still surrounded by this enormous, magical, opaque barrier. But you see Istis's reflection inside of the barrier. And she talks to you and says, I'm really proud of you all for not taking the chalice's offer. I can't imagine how difficult that must have been to resist.
Thank you.
Yeah, that means a lot. It was not easy.
She says, you're probably wondering why the bubble didn't come down after you came through it.
Yeah, I stabbed it.
And you made an exit for yourself, but Refuge is out of step with the rest of time. And I'm going to get them back on schedule now, but time passed a bit differently in there than it did with the rest of the world. June, using the cup on the day that the worm attacked, she looped a single day 2,517 times. Well, they're about to catch up. You should really watch, she says. And Istis disappears, and the bubble goes transparent, and you see Refuge and its citizens on the other side, and they're moving extremely quickly because time is moving really fast in the bubble. You see like almost a light strobe light effect, and it's because the sun is rising and setting a few times per second. And the whole town is gathered near the edge of the bubble, near where you're standing, and you watch in time lapse as they quickly erect a big wooden sign, which they decorate and ornately paint with a single word, and the sign just reads, "Thanks." And under the sign, there are three clay figures that some kids are crafting up, and they do it in time lapse really quickly, and it's modeled after you. There's these three little clay statues that kids are making. And as you move, as you watch this fast forward scene in front of you, every time you move, the kids like instantly reshape these clay statues to kind of like mimic you, like they're playing a game with you, even though time is passing at wildly different speeds. And nearly 7 years pass in 10 minutes, and you see it all. You see midsummer harvest festivals and candle nights celebrations. You see a few weddings. You see a couple of funeral processions. You see good days and you see bad days. But the whole town and its inhabitants seem happy, like the events of all those loops brought them together in a strange way. And after 10 minutes or so, time inside the bubble slows down until it's nearly at real time. And the town gathers around the sign they erected in your honor. And without a sound, the bubble pops. And Refuge and everybody living in Refuge is there, and they're cheering. And they quickly sort of envelop all four of you. There's a lot of folks who want to know more about Avi, who they haven't met. He's just this mystery man who they've watched through the bubble for 7 years. They pull him in and just start asking Avi all these questions like, "Oh, we had bets. We had a theory that you were their boss, and you're the one that really helped him bring the bubble down." And Avi's just like sort of graciously hanging out with them. And they whisk all of you away to a big feast they've prepared in your honor. And I guess before heading out of Refuge, who in town do you want to say goodbye to? Who do you want to check in on 7 years later in their time?
I want to check on Paloma.
Okay. Yeah. Paloma's right there. Like Paloma's ready. She is she looks much older. She's an older woman now. And she hands all of you just like a giant basket of baked goods, like a ridiculously large basket of baked goods, which yeah, you Taco, you appreciate the craftsmanship that went into these. And she says, "You all did very good. I saw many different results that could have been in the crystals. Many of them were quite shitty, but it seems like you found the best one of all. So well done."
I want to check on Cassidy.
I have a question for Paloma.
Yes, what is it?
Did I make the right choice?
That's hard to say. We're all here, and I think it was the right choice. Because things could have gone very, very badly for all of us if you had made a different choice. So it was maybe not the best choice for you, but it was the best choice for us. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
She starts to walk back into the crowd. Before she does, she grabs you, Taco. She says, "Taco, can I talk to you for a moment?"
Sure.
She pulls you away from the group. She reaches out her hand. And she hands you a crystal, and it has a prophecy in it, and you see it, and her eyes kind of roll back, and she says,
"I have one last prophecy for you, Taco, something you will need to know. In your hour of greatest need, you will find the power that you seek from the man wreathed in flames."
Jesus, like, can you
just...
I have, like, now three prophecies I have to keep in my head simultaneously. Thank you for this. Like a fucking walking story Bible over here. And Paloma, is that all?
Yes, that is it.
Well, my lady, I have one request for you.
Yes, what is it?
Will you find the kids in town who spent all that time to make those beautiful statues of us? And tell them to make my dick bigger. And then I reach my hand up for a high five. And she's like,
she instantly goes up and high fives you. And she's like, she is rolling laughing.
I knew she was down.
You got me good that time, son.
Oh, where's Junebug?
You run after Junebug?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do that. Let's do Dad and Cassidy first. Yeah. And then we'll do you and Junebug. You find Cassidy. She has been exonerated of all guilt for the crime of blowing up the Temple of Estus.
7 years, yeah.
Yeah, no, she's been a good member of town. And in fact, when you find Cassidy,
yes,
she's wearing like a nice suit. She's wearing like a nice suit, and she has a top hat on. And you find her in the Elder's Manor because she has been made the Elder of Refuge. And she says, it's my little goblin friend. I remember you.
Well, I knew you were made of sterner stuff. And, you know, people love that folksy shit. That all, and if you're a candidate, I can see why you've done so well in politics.
It's like I told you, Cassie's just chock full of good ideas from my toes to my tips. My frosted tips, it's a new fashion style I'm trying out in the last 7 years. It's all the rage here in this bubble.
Well, I'm very proud of you, Cassidy.
You think you'll ever come back to visit?
No. No, no.
Well, okay, all right then.
Don't you want to give me something? Taco got something.
I think I've got just the thing for you.
Okay.
She reaches into her pocket and she says, in your hour of greatest need, these will supply you with just the saving grace that you require, young man.
And what are they?
You stretch out your hand, and she drops a couple of root beer barrels into your hand, but they're all sticky, and they're covered in lint and stuff because they were in her loose pocket just kind of floating around.
Thanks.
There's my favorites. You know this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've been trapped in a bubble. It's a closed environment for 7 years, typical. And I've held on to these root beer barrels. I've fought off the temptation to eat these things. Where are you going?
Typical. Fine. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Where's Junebug?
You find Junebug in the Davy Lamp, and she says, she's like, she'd be about 15 now. Yeah. So she's a young woman now, and she's working at the Davy Lamp, and, she's working with Ren, who also greets you happily as you all make your way into town. And June, thanks you effusively. She seems wise beyond her years now because she went through something, you know, magical and sort of inexplicable. And she thanks you. And Magnus, she says, hold on one second, and runs up to her room in the Davy Lamp. And when she comes back down, she hands you a tube. And it's like the type of like tube that scholars might store like scrolls inside. Mm-hmm. And she says, I think you should have this. And the tube has your name scrawled on the outside of it. Like a, you know, a gift tag or something like that. And she says, I got to get back to work, but it's really good to see you.
It's good to see you too, Junebug.
She says,
Should I open it?
She says, good luck. And she runs back up the stairs and into her room. And Magnus, you actually hear in your head, you hear the voice of the red robe that you've seen a few times now. And he says,
Magnus, if you open that tube, Magnus, it's going to be harder for me to protect you.
Yeah, bite my ass. I open the tube.
Okay. You open the tube and see what's inside of it, and we're going to resolve that a bit later. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I need to find somebody.
Okay.
Before we go.
Who do you look up?
I want to find Ren.
Okay. Yeah, you hop into the Davy Lamp and you see Ren, and she is polishing some glasses behind the bar, and she says, oh my God, Taco! I'm just kidding. I remember you coming up and seeing me a couple times. How about that magic lesson, boss?
Actually, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. And before I had stepped inside, I'd cast Fabricate on some blank paper that I brought with me.
Okay.
And I unfurl for her a diploma.
Okay.
And it said, top of her class, this scroll bestows upon you, Ren, the high honor of being the first and only graduate of Taco's amazing school of magic.
Her hands clasp over her mouth and her eyes go wide when she sees this diploma. And she says, aren't I supposed to, like, take lessons and stuff? Aren't I supposed to, like, learn from you first before?
Ren?
Yeah?
I've been watching the whole time.
Oh, that's really good.
She takes the diploma and she says, I'll never forget this, and jumps up and gives you a big hug.
And here's one other thing.
And I give her the Gust Master, and I say, I don't need this, because I know how to cast this spell. And it's heavy.
She takes the fan from you, so the Gust Master 5000, and
Oh, no, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'll use it every day.
In my head, I thought this is an incredibly special treasure to me. I should have flipped those, so I'm sorry. Let me try again. This is an incredible treasure, and I want you to have it.
Thank you. Thank you, Taco. I'll never forget this. Will I ever see you again?
Ren? It's hard to say. I'm not the DM on this one, buddy. So here's hoping. I don't know.
All right.
I have one more thing I want to find out.
Yeah, too. Please.
I want to go up to the temple.
Okay.
Temple's there, right?
Yeah, Temple of Issus is there, but it is rebuilt. It's not the temple that you magically rebuilt. The two brothers have sort of rebuilt it. And in fact, ooh, this is good. You see Redmond, and you've seen Redmond before. He's 7 years older. And you see Luca, and Luca's not a skeleton anymore. Luca, whatever magical effect that was done to Luca while inside the bubble has been reversed, and now he just kind of looks like a shorter, kind of pudgier Redmond. And they have their robes on, and you find them at the Temple of Vistas, which was not like magically restructured. It's just been rebuilt by Anne.
Hello, brothers.
Magnus!
Yeah, hey! Hey, nice voice!
Thank you! It's the one I've always had!
I'm so glad to see you've got skin and stuff again, and that the temple's rebuilt. Can I have a moment inside for a second? Just me?
Sure, give him the room, Redmond.
And Redmond nods because I don't remember what his voice sounds like. And they walk outside of the temple.
Okay.
Are you doing a two cathedrals thing?
No.
All right.
Can you hear me? Is this a thing? You're probably not on call, but if I could get you for like a second, I just have one question.
Let me help you. Testing 1, 2, 3. Istus.
Two candles that are sitting on the pulpit light themselves.
I didn't get a chance to ask because it happened after we met, but when we were with June/the Cup, it was running back through our history. There were these long periods of static. Do you have any idea what that is?
Nothing happens.
Is it anything we need to be concerned about?
One of the candles falls over. And the flame on it goes out, and the candle rolls off the pulpit and falls down the stairs.
I walk up to the pulpit.
Okay.
To make an offering to the mighty Istus.
Okay.
I reach into my pocket, and I go and I put there, and I say,
Mighty Istus, an offering to you to show our love and gratitude.
And I put those two nasty root beer barrels on it.
Okay. Super you hear cool. A voice on the wind go, Yuck.
Oh, I'll take them back then.
No, leave them. Maybe I can clean them off.
One last thing you do in refuge before you take off. As you make your way back from the temple, you walk by the Elder's Manor and by the statue of Jack June and the red robe, the bigger, burlier red robe than the one that you just saw standing between them. And the kids have also made a little statue of Roswell there. And you sort of stop for a moment and look at this statue and admire the kid's handiwork, I guess. And you hear a voice go, boo. And you look, and it's the Vermilion Flycatcher, the red bird that is now sitting on the statue of Roswell, and says, I don't remember being nearly this rotund when I was more full-bodied, but I guess they did a good enough job.
You lost a lot of weight when your legs fell off there at the end. That one was on us.
And yeah. Clay adds 10 pounds to you, really.
Roswell says, who's now just completely inside of the bird body, says, it's really good to see you guys. I'm glad you stuck around.
It's really good to see you not dead.
I don't know what magic animated me and made me, you know, commandable. But whatever it was, I feel like I'm kind of not bound to service here anymore. So I'm gonna fly around and see the world and, you know, find out what I'm doing here.
Well, if you get bored, there's this like half moon thing up in the sky. You can come check in on us and hang out.
Yeah, most birds can fly to the moon, right?
It's not really the moon though, Taco. Like, we can get to it in a bubble.
Well, that's exactly the kind of stuff I want to give a shot. So maybe one day I'll try to fly to the moon and I'll see you there.
And I'd like to point out that even though we controlled you, when you were left to your own devices, you sacrificed your life for us.
No, I'm still alive. It's all good.
And also, like, we were all there for that too, Merle. That's not like a big reveal.
Yeah, like, true.
I'm just happy. I'm just happy you did.
Oh, okay.
So we didn't
just
die.
Just kind of recapping the whole experience.
I'm glad we didn't die.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't die either. Okay, I'll see you guys around. And Roswell flitters and flies off. I have a quick epilogue I want to get to. So Avi summons a bubble for you guys, an extraction bubble, and your return to the moon base is fairly without consequence. I'm assuming you hand over the cup to be destroyed?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, it's sort of the same. Okay.
I would like to know what was on the paper before I do. Can I know that?
That's the epilogue. Okay. We'll get to it. You hand over the cup to Davenport in the director's chambers. I know we're kind of moving past this, but we got to wrap it. And there's one other thing we need to get to. You put it inside one of those big, heavy lead balls with the little circular window in it. He shuts it inside, wheels it into the big white chamber. It gets put up on a pedestal. Big spears of light pierce through it. And when it opens up again, it is empty. And the director says, Avi reported everything in already. I guess I'm sorry for making such a big deal out of everything. Apparently this relic wasn't as difficult to reclaim as I thought it was going to be. So, well done, boys.
Nah, it was super tough.
No, like, get bent. I tell her the whole story.
Okay, well, I take it back. That sounds fucking awful.
Yeah, it was real rough, and we died a bunch.
Well,
and so I think we probably get our life insurance a couple times over, right? Some kind of payout from the Bureau?
I don't know about the life insurance stuff, but how about this? And she forks over a bag with 5,400 gold pieces inside of it, which you split three ways. I think that's eight. Is that 18? 18, 18, 8? Did I do the math right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Each of you gets 1,800 gold pieces and a token for the Fantasy Gashapon. All right, let's get to this epilogue real quick. It's later that night. Merle, you are laying out on the lawn of the Bureau of Balance Quad, and it's pretty late. Most folks have retired to their bunks for the evening. There's a nice cool breeze that's made cooler by the elevation of the Bureau HQ. And you're laying on the grass, and there's a small bed of flowers actually growing up where your soulwood arm is laying on the grass. And you're looking up at the stars, which you're known to do sometimes, and the elevation of the headquarters gives you sort of an unparalleled view of. So you often look up at the stars, but tonight, as you're laying out and looking upward, you feel like there are fewer stars in the sky than there usually are when you do your stargazing. And as you just sort of intently watch the sky to try to confirm that, to try to count them, you see it undeniably. A star winks out right in front of your eyes.
Am I drunk?
Not tonight.
That's weird.
Taco, you take the central elevator of the residential dome downward that same night, down to the bottom floor, which houses your guys' private dormitory. And as you open your door and you drop your keys at the small table by the front door and hang up your cloak of the manta ray on the cloak rack, I imagine you're pretty exhausted. This has been a pretty exhausting sort of loop. I don't want to speak for you. Maybe you're good to go.
No, I pat the cloak of the manta ray and say, someday you'll be useful, friend.
You hang up your cloak and you turn and you realize you have a visitor in this room. He's sitting on the couch in the living quarters that you all share. He's wearing a fancy black suit. He's got a super handsome face.
And it's Travis McElroy.
It's Kravitz, who stands up and says, well, we need to talk, don't we? Because you boys, you've added quite a bit to your death count, haven't you?
That one's on me.
Magnus, you are in a little corner of the dining hall, which is a big, massive communal space for the Bureau. Late as it is, there's nobody else here. That gives you the privacy that you need to look at what's inside this tube one more time. And you pop it open and unfurl it. And there's something strange about the parchment inside of this tube, which is that you can see it. You can see what's on it. But when you try to draw conclusions based on what you see, when you try to understand what it is you're seeing, your mind turns to static. And it's an incredibly uncomfortable sensation. So what you see inside the tube are two sheets of paper. And the first one is a design for the statue that stands in the middle of Refuge, depicting Jack, June, and the broad-shouldered red robe standing between them. And it has a date etched in the corner of it. The other piece of parchment, when you look at the date, you can tell this was an older draft of this statue, an older design of the same statue. And in this sketch, in this earlier sketch, Jack and June look exactly the same. But the Red Robe's hood is pulled down, and you can see his face. And it's an incredibly familiar face, Magnus, because it's your face. This figure in this red robe is you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
What's the deal with Brexit? Have you seen Happy Valley yet?
How do British people pronounce Edinburgh, Leicester, or Norwich?
Not like that.
Are you tired of getting your world news from reliable sources, often with no puns or sexual innuendo?
Why was there a butcher's hat haunting Coronation Street?
What's Coronation Street, and why is Dave Holmes obsessed with it?
International Waters pairs a team of comedians in LA against a team of comedians in London in a pop culture battle royale. Join us once a fortnight to hear the best comedians in the world trade jokes and stories and maybe even learn something at the same time. International Waters with me, Dave Holmes. Find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Good news, everyone. There are still a few tickets remaining for the London Podcast Festival, September 22nd through 26th. We've just announced a dazzling new addition to the Bullseye lineup. Sharon Horgan, creator and star of the hit shows Pulling and Catastrophe, as well as a new show, Divorce, which launches soon on HBO. Comedian Josie Long, Veep creator Armando Iannucci, and musician Romare round out the Bullseye lineup. But the fun doesn't stop there, friends. International Waters and Judge John Hodgman tickets are still available, too. Do not sleep on this. Feast your eyes on the juicy full lineup and grab your tickets right now at MaximumFun.org.